nation. The hobby is the people. Weekly news and interviews. It's your number one source. Sports Card Nation. The hobby is the people. Sports Card Nation. Welcome to episode 97 of the Sports Card Nation podcast. If you are a rock music fan, you probably recognize that song in the intro belonging to the band Van Halen. And I know we don't talk a lot about stuff that isn't sports or hobby related, but rock music lost a legend this week. Eddie Van Halen passing away at 65. Van Halen probably in my top 10 bands, favorite bands. They're not my favorite by any means, but still legendary Hall of Fame band. And Eddie Van Halen's arguably the greatest guitar player in the history of music. And so his loss, I mean, if we're equating it to paralleling it to sports, it's sort of like the Michael Jordan or the Babe Ruth of sports. I mean, arguably the greatest lead guitar player ever. I mean, you know, let's be real. You know, he's not even a singer, yet he was more synonymous with the band. I mean, obviously it had him and his brother's name. His son, Wolfie, later took over for Michael Ray Anthony, but you know, it says something when the lead guitar player is actually more known for the band than the front man. And that's saying something. And so rest in peace, Eddie Van Halen. A big loss in the music industry. All right. So with that being said, wanted to pay my respects there. Great show today, talking about paying our respects. We have a guest on that's been on this show prior. He was on an episode 49 in November of 2019. And when we had him on then, he's a wealth of knowledge. It's Rich Klein, who's wore many hats in the hobby, super knowledgeable, knows his stuff, been involved in the hobby a long, long time. And when I had him on episode 49, I kind of just picked his brain and asked him a lot of questions. And then I really didn't ask anything about him or his hobby, you know, where it all started. He's one of my cohorts on Hobby Hotline. And, you know, talking to him, I'm like, you know, I got to get you back on because, number one, you're a great person and a great guest. But number two, I feel like I sort of missed an opportunity to, you know, he's always talking about the hobby and passing on that knowledge, but sometimes I don't think we talk enough about the guy. And so Rich is here today, and we're going to talk about the guy and what he does, and we're going to talk about the state of the hobby. We're going to talk about shows. He's a big show guy as far as promoting and being a dealer. And so he just recently did a show, and we're going to talk about the landscape of the showscape with the ongoing pandemic. So going to be a great show. Going to give away, announce the winner of the $50 one-of-one card shop break giveaway. And so we're going to be doing that every other week. We used, you know, thanks to Steve Chata at 101, we were doing $25 each week. We're going to do a $50 break credit every 2 weeks, so twice a month. So thanks to them for allowing us to do that. Finally, in the intro, I want to give a special shout out to Black Jaded Wolf. They're in Brooklyn, New York, my hometown, and they're going to be opening a new location very close to the Barclays Center, where my Brooklyn Nets also play. And it's a big thing For them, congratulations. I know they're going to be doing some grading submissions. And, you know, I met them indirectly at the National in Chicago and saw their showcases, and they got some inventory. Very impressive. You know, and walking around the show, their showcases definitely stood out amongst others. And, you know, glad, you know, my hometown of Brooklyn, they're going to have a great shop in Black Jaded Wolf. And good luck to them, and check them out if you get a chance. Right near the Barclay Center. And I expect big things from them. And I know a friend of mine from Instagram, CJ Collectible, he's going to be working with them. And so they're going to be doing big things. Congrats to all involved there. And with that being said, let's get this party started. It's time for What's Cracking. All right, the big probably story of the week is the new record for vintage card sale price realized in an auction. Belongs to a PS3. T206 Honest Wagner. It went for $3.25 million through Mile High Auctions and beat the previous record of $3.12 million. It's number two overall on most expensive card, behind the recent Mike Trout Super Fractor 101 from Vegas Dave. So, you know, all these big crazy cards are still bringing millions, and you know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, where the future cards kind of fall into the play here. So a lot of money exchanging hands, and cards becoming celebrities in their own right.
Great success.
All right, let's talk a little NHL hockey, something we don't talk probably often enough about. The NHL draft just took place. My Rangers had the number one pick, and they took the obvious choice, Alexis Lafreniere. Speaking of him, I don't PC a lot of stuff, honestly, anymore, but looking to acquire some of his stuff. So if you think he can help me out, let me know. He's also signed an exclusive deal with Upper Deck, so you will only find his autographed cards in Upper Deck products. And also signed an exclusive deal with Upper Deck, the number two pick in the NHL draft by the LA Kings, Quentin Byfield. So the one and two picks are both signed to Upper Deck. Alexis Lafreniere and Quentin Byfield. Kudos to Upper Deck for locking those two guys down rather quickly. And finally, PSA making some big moves, but they're not really moving so much. They're purchased a building across their street from their current location in Santa Ana, California. It is going, with this purchase being across the street, it's going to double their size. This property is 62,870 square feet, again doubling their size, and rumors have it that their plan is to go automation with grading to get, you know, how soon or when, I don't know. Maybe they don't even know that either. But it appears that's the plan, is to automate their processes so that they can grade more cards, get out of their backlog, and that sort of thing. And if that does happen, you know, we talk about the big three and now a fourth entrant in CSG, but well, they're still trying to get off the ground. But you know, if whoever goes to automation first, and it looks like PSA is headed that direction, it's really going to put pressure on the other big two or big three, depending on how you look at it, to match eye for an eye. And, you know, the grading wars have been going on, but now they might have officially begun. Now, my personal thoughts on automated grading, I'm don't know enough about it. I mean, we don't know how accurate. I'd love to see some sort of analytics to how this is all going to play out. I will say this, I'm sort of old-fashioned. You know, when the talk comes up in Major League Baseball about replacing the home plate umpire with a computer strike zone, I'm not a fan of that. I think there's something to be said about a guy with a chest protector back there crouching behind the catcher, seeing that pitch come in similar to the batter's view. And it's been that way. Listen, I'm not opposed to change, but it's just some lore to that. And I'm not a fan of that Quest Tech, you know, to replace the strike, the umpire with a computer. But, you know, it's 2020, soon to be 2021. And technology is a huge part of everything we do, including grading. So it's going to be interesting to see when, if this happens, and what the trickle down or ripple effects are with the other companies.
Sports Card Nation podcast is your weekly hobby and sports podcast. Now on tons of platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, and many more. Listened to in 44 different countries globally, Sports Card Nation is one of the most interactive podcasts around, providing great content, giveaways, and some of the hobby's best interview guests without time constraints. Thousands can't be wrong. We want to thank all the wonderful listeners around the world, our awesome guests on the show, and our tremendous sponsors making us what we are today. Remember, without you, there's no us.
All right, happy to have my next guest. He's making his second appearance on the Sports Card Nation podcast on the 101 Card Shop guest line. He was with us back in November of 2019, episode 49. It's been a little bit way too long. I'll just introduce him as just a wealth of hobby knowledge who's wore many hats in the hobby and in the industry, and I'm glad he's back to join us here in 2020, and he's actually one of my co-hosts now on, he's always been, but officially on Hobby Hotline. That's Mr. Rich Klein. Rich, welcome.
John, it's good to see you. Last time we did it purely over the phone.
Yeah.
Now, thanks to, this is one benefit of the pandemic. Instead of just doing phones, we do a lot, life does a lot more Zoom. So I actually now see you while we're doing this, which the only thing I'm grateful for is you're not in the hot tub.
No hot tub tonight. And next to me in the box here, you're just going to automatically look better. So you're welcome there as well. So, you know, speaking of the last time you were on, Rich, you know, I went and listened to that episode earlier today, actually. And, you know, I was a little disappointed in myself. It was early going. I think I'm a better interviewer now, I like to think, than I was then. And we never even touched about on your how you got your start. We kind of just, because you're a wealth of knowledge, I was just firing questions at you about current events and things coming up, and we never spoke about you. And I thought I did a little bit of a disservice for that. So I definitely, you know, I made a note to myself mentally, you know, knowing you were coming back on, that I wanted to definitely talk about how it all began, where it started, how it started, what year it was, and what it was that got you to where we know you now. But where did it start?
Well, you know, I started collecting like most kids of my era, just like you did. You know, 11 years later, you got your Reggie Jacks out of your first pack.
Yeah.
I probably got a Mickey Mantle or something close out of my first real pack, because my first series that I actively collected is 68 third series. Now, you can't do much better than the series. Well, at the time, he was just a hot prospect. Johnny Bench for me, Mickey Mantle, Carl Yastrzemski, Orlando Cepeda, the NL MVP in 67. I think Harmon Killebrew was in that series. I mean, all these people that are in that series. And then there are other people, like local favorites, like Tommy Davis and Horace Clark. So, you know, you get those cards. And, you know, I collected a few series that year. The next year I really went, and I got lucky. 69 was a more easily findable series for the last couple series, I actually completed my set from PAX in 69. And then 70, 71, I collected actively, you know, as much as I could. 72, I really slacked, and, you know, I was starting to do less. I did buy some fifth series cards on a family vacation. Those were kind of cool. I liked those better than the few packs I had bought. The pictures were shinier. And then 73, I bought some first series cards and maybe a few second series cards, and that was about it. And then we were lucky. We had a local card store by 1975. So I actually would just go buy the set each year. And so I had a set in 75, 76, 70. And by 77, I started subscribing to the two major hobby publications at the time, the Trader Speaks and Sports Collector's Digest. And I always enjoyed collecting. I always enjoyed finding stuff. And so I went to these places, and the cards were nickel, dimes, quarters, and they were cheap to get cards. So I just started accumulating. And then in Montclair State, like April 79 was the first time I set up at the show, and I came home with a lot of money. Well, when you come home with a lot of money, it's like, oh, whatever I'm doing all right. And then I didn't make as much, but I had a really good show the second time. It's like, hey, this is a good way to help pay for college. So other than tuition, which my parents paid after my freshman year, I paid for everything else in college with baseball cards. They paid tuition. I paid everything else. And then I tried to get a job, but it was the midst of the recession. And, you know, nobody wanted to hire somebody that seemed that they were also a bit of an entrepreneur. You know, it was not easy getting a job in 81, 82, just like today. And most of us from my college who didn't go to law school or med school, that was about the average for us, was 16, 18 months to get a job. And then I ended up working for a company in 1984. I left the job I was at, went to a company called Sports Information Database, which was 25 years ahead of its time. It was basically, if you've ever seen what Baseball Reference is, that's what they were trying to do. But in 1984, before the internet, before all the data was really available, way too far ahead of its time. Great staff we had, but it failed in about a year and a half. And then I went, and I basically dealt full time until, you know, Dr. Becker was nice enough to offer me a job in 1990. And then I spent 17 full years, 2 years of contract, you know, at Beckett. You know, and I learned a lot in those days. You know, I learned what I didn't know to some extent. And then I ended up, you know, it had been several years since I worked me full time. And then Bank of America had a lower level position, but working was better than not working. And then when they outsourced my job, you know, one of the things I went through, I was going to networking sessions. And one thing they said was post on social media, you know, at least once a week, something just to keep your name out there. Well, one of my posts, I mentioned, well, if you really want to see me do multitasking, see me run a card show. Well, Tim Getz of ComC, who I had talked to previously a few times, and had finally settled everything with the Beckett lawsuit, said, oh, good, you're available. And then we worked out the salary and the working arrangements. And I was very fortunate in those days that I still got two severance checks with my first two ComC checks. So I wish it had lasted longer, but at least I was getting double paychecks for a month or so.
Yeah.
And I've been with ComC ever since. And then on the personal side, it's a funny story. I met my wife, Libby, now my wife of 15 years. You know, we're both Jewish. I met her at a Jewish singles event on Easter Sunday in 2004. 6 months later, we're engaged. About 8 months after that, we're married.
Yeah, sometimes you just know, you know.
Yes.
I could tell a similar story with my wife, you know, 3-4 months of dating, and we were engaged, and then a year later, we were married. And listen, it's 21 years later, so we might have known, you know. But I want to speak, like, when you sell, what is your inventory comprised of? Is it all vintage, Rich? Is it a mix of modern, vintage? Where are you at?
It's really a mix of modern and vintage.
Yeah.
People look at me and say, oh, you're all vintage. And then they look at what I have and they say, wait a second, you have a lot of modern stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, I prefer vintage. It's an easier world for me to understand and deal in.
Yeah.
But I know certain vintage. I know certain modern things, so I get certain modern things. And sometimes I get lucky with what I buy in modern, and sometimes I don't.
Yeah.
But I'm very frugal with what I buy, so my percent markup is pretty good. And that's really the key. And at the show this weekend, I was really only the second person. There was one person. He is really good vintage. His name is Roger Neufeld. He's a longtime dealer. He has wonderful vintage. And if you didn't want to buy vintage from Roger, you bought it from me. Yeah. So that helped me have a plus my good friend Bruce Parker had brought a couple extra showcases for me. So I had showcase cards and people said, oh, you have this. Oh, you have that. Yes, yes. Okay. And so I had a really good show between showcase cards, some people digging through my boxes, and some vintage. I mean, I would have liked to have sold a few more vintage commons considering, but with Roger in the room, I know I don't do a lot of that. Some vintage, which was fun. And as I said, I like that world better.
So do you have any, like, stuff from when you first collected? Did you, like, keep any of that? Or did it
I have, like, nothing from before. The only thing that I know of that I have from before, actually, I have maybe one or two old photos from, you know, these dinners, my fifth grade and fourth grade, you know, we would go to the father-son dinner, and there'd be a player signing. One year was Emerson Boozer, one year was Dave Herman, one year was Jumping Johnny Green from Michigan State and then the Cincinnati Royals. You know, I have a couple of those photos, and I have the little, I'll call it Bible. It's not what we would call it, what, you know, if you're Christian, you call it the Old Testament.
Yeah.
That the sisterhood of my synagogue, which no longer exists and basically went away when I was in college, and no, it was a Ramada Inn the last time I was actually in that space. And I once wrote about that, that I've written about that, and I actually did a sermon about that, how when I was growing up, it was a synagogue.
Yeah.
The last time I was in the actual physical location of the synagogue, it had become a Ramada Inn.
Yeah.
And I was visiting, and it was a card show trip, but it was Thanksgiving of 1998, and I was also visiting my father. So it was like double duty. Dr. Beckett was really nice about having people take trips home because it was a win-win. You're staying at home. These show trips were not cheap when you're doing in those days. But one of the most expensive things were hotels. Well, you're not paying the hotel.
Yeah.
You're still paying for the rental car, but you're not paying for the hotel.
Keep the overhead down.
You know, and plus, you know, there was one time where I didn't have to pay for a meal the whole trip. So I come back with an expense report, and it's like $7 for food. And my manager goes, Rich, $7 for food? I didn't pay for anything, Rich. You can make one meal, please? Just because otherwise we'll never get away with this when anybody else goes home. Okay, I'll add one meal. And I did. I added a meal. But, you know, that was under my control. But, you know, we, in those days, most of us who traveled, you know, we were young. Most of us were single. And we didn't want to, we were spending a lot of money as a company on show trips. We didn't want to do $75 steak dinners. I was perfectly happy going. I remember on one trip, I'm in going to Walnut, California for a show trip. And I stay at this hotel and there's an Italian deli next door. You know, one of these hole in the wall Italian, one of my favorite. I go and I order what we call it, I think, a hoagie or a sub or a grinder or whatever term you want to use. And I get the chips and a soda, and I go back to my room. And I'm perfectly happy, and I didn't have dinner. And I had dinner with myself, and I watched. I remember it was the weekend of the 2000, I think, U.S. Tennis Open, where Tiger Woods wins by 15 strokes and is playing golf on a level, like, unknown to mortal men.
Yeah.
And I'm enjoying it, and I'm eating dinner in my room, and I'm enjoying watching that. It's like, I don't really need the expensive dinner.
Yeah, simple pleasures sometimes.
It is.
I've had a card store. I started shows, setting up at shows at age 15 with a tax number. And ever since, been doing sales. I PC'd more as a younger guy than I do now. As I get older, I sort of keep less. Do you find kind of the similar thing or not necessarily?
Well, yes and no. I'm lucky in that, and we'll talk about this. I make sure there's nothing bad in the donations we get. But I'm going to be honest with you. There's a couple guys from my college that are in the junk wax era. I pull them.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to miss Gene Larkin or Frank Seminara cards. So I have one of the biggest assortments of Gene Larkin cards on the planet. That's like my PC. It doesn't hurt anybody. I'm not like taking $400 cards out. The world will survive. And if somebody really tells me they need a Gene Larkin card for a set, I'll get it for them.
So if we go to Comp C, we won't find any Gene Larkin cards. Is that what you're saying?
No, you'll find plenty. You just won't find any from my account.
All right, I just check it because I'm thinking, like, if Gene Larkin's, you know, a relative or something wants to pick up some of his cards, I wonder if they had cornered the market or not.
There are plenty out there.
We're going to step aside for a quick break, but when we come back, more from Rich Klein. Hey, folks, tired of going to the retail store and finding the wax shelves cleaned out bare? I've got the answer for you, and that answer is Hotbox Cards. They offer a monthly subscription service at a great price level. What's better than getting a box of sports cards on your doorstep every month? Not a whole lot, and these boxes don't cost a whole lot. Let me tell you what's in each and every Hotbox. 3 relic or auto cards, 3 unopened hobby packs, 50 bonus cards featuring stars, rookies, semi-stars, inserts, and parallels. And one in every 5 boxes has a red-hot envelope with a surprise card. They also honor expired redemptions with a comparable item. So there's no worry about getting that old redemption card with nothing to show for it. Check them out at www.hotboxcards.net. October is Legendary Month. Baseball boxes will have a Laughlin World Series card, and football boxes will contain a Legendary Star. And put in promo code SCNATION. SC Nation, all in cap, and your box will contain an extra hit. We are back with Rich Klein.
But what is funny, I also pull for the guy that's doing that. He's got a quixotic goal. He wants every Tim Wallet card ever created.
All right, well,
every month. He's got like 36,000.
Yeah.
And I mean, he writes a blog about it. I've got to send him my next package.
I think I know who you're talking about. He's from Watertown, New York.
But he's in Arizona now.
Okay, yeah, I know who you're. I don't know him personally, but I know of him. And I believe at one point he was in Watertown. And the reason I even bring that up, I actually lived in Watertown for a brief time, like 1 or 2 years. And so whenever I see Watertown,
one of these towns like Harry Chapin, your relative would say, you know, one of my favorite Harry Chapin songs. And I don't know if you've ever mentioned this, but you shocked the heck out of me on Facebook when you mentioned how Harry Chapin, you're related to him.
Yeah, he's my third cousin. And now, I'm full disclosure, Rich, I've never met him personally, and he's unfortunately passed away, tragically. And my grandma, who knew him, obviously, in a little bit, just told me growing up that, hey, your third cousin was Harry Chapin. And, you know, as a little kid or as a younger man, I wasn't into that music. So I really kind of just, and when I was like, okay, that's cool. And then as I got older, I got into more of that, you know, that old rock and stuff. And I remembered, like, hey, we're related. And it's kind of neat. It would have been nice, you know, I believe 7 or 8 when he passed, but it would have been nice to still meet him and have that story. But you know, just the fact that a talented musician and we're related, he did a lot. I think you noticed he did a lot of philanthropical things. As a matter of fact, you know, he died on his way to a concert, which was going to be, he was going to do it free, and all the proceeds were going to go to charity. Unfortunately, you know, he didn't get there. But that was the kind of guy, from everything I was told and read about him as well, that he just did a lot of charity work. And I like to feel like I'm someone that likes to help others, maybe less fortunate when I can. And, you know, so if we have that in common, besides being cousins, there's worse things there. And so, yeah, so when, and I do listen to, like, I do, like, even if we weren't related, like, I still, you know, like his music and his songs. That has nothing to do with it, but I'm sure, you know, being related makes you a little bit more interested. And so, you know, my son, who's 20, you know, didn't realize till I told him that he has a connection. He thought it was pretty neat. Like, he knew who Harry Chapin was, and had listened to his stuff without even realizing, like, hey, we have a family connection. And he's, you know, he thought that was kind of neat. So,
well, Well, you have to understand that, you know, one of the things about Harry Chapin, as you pointed out, was at least half of his concerts each year, yeah, once he got famous, were charity concerts. And then he also, I believe, and I forgot the name of the organization, but he was really, he would go to Congress. He would, you know, he wanted to make sure everybody got food to eat. He was way ahead of his time.
Yeah.
You know, when USA for Africa did We Are the World, you know, when the famine hit Africa, you know, and a lot of them credited what Harry Chapin had done as their inspiration, you know, for what they did. So it's quite an honor. And, you know, and I actually got to see him really in a very more quiet venue. He actually did a concert at our high school. He actually did two concerts. But the first one was like an assembly. The week Cats in the Cradle was number one on WABC in New York. Well, in 1974, WABC was the bomb. It was the radio station.
You know, or as Howard Stern would say, WABC. I don't know if you ever saw that movie, but
I avoid Howard Stern as much as I can.
But somebody who's seen that movie will get that. But that's okay. Go ahead, Rich. I'm sorry.
Because Howard Stern actually worked at its competitor, WNBC.
Yeah.
You know, 66 on your dial, which is really 660. Yeah. But he was Cats in the Cradle was number one in the country, and I'm number one on WABC the week he appears. And I had the next period off, and we maybe had 100, 200 people left, and he just chatted with us for the next hour. It was a wonderful experience. But, you know, as I said, the thing with Harry was all the charity work he did and all the good work he did. You know, I was talking about how many cards I get to go through, and I now use the San Francisco Bridge, the Golden Gate Bridge, as my background when we're on Zoom. But if you see me on Hobby Hotline, you see the boxes in my office.
Yeah.
All of those boxes are donations, and we're trying to have our next Adat Haromim synagogue show on November 22nd. We're hopeful we can talk everybody into it. It would be a skinnier version because one of the things I like about that show, and we've had people get amazing cards out of their bags. I know that Angela and Stefan Loeffler, you know, who have been, you know, and they've done their part of the About the Cards. They pulled some Evan Mathis numbered card out of one of their, and Evan bought it on ComC from them for like $200 out of one of our bags. So
and
I mean, there's good stuff.
To the charity.
Yeah, and you know, and the bags cost a dollar. So it's not, you know, and there's 100, 200 cards in every bag. We won't have really as many prize slips this year because I can't really have tables with prizes with people gathering and all that. Where we might have some prizes where I'll say, go see Rich or a winner.
Yeah.
But one thing I always like doing is getting cards into people's hands.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to have, I have about 250,000 cards at home, which is frankly about 200,000 more cards that I really want to have.
Yeah.
And I go through them and I always pull cards each year, you know, for those boxes. But we get donations and when I was at Beckett, one of the things I'm very proud of is I basically, I'm going to put the air quotes, I basically led the Card for Kids thing we did for 7 or 8 years where we, in the days when the hobby was big, we would get all sorts of cards and we would donate them to local Ronald McDonald's houses, local charities. In fact, I know a couple of people who still do things like that now. And they put out the cards, like 15 for a dollar. They just get them, we give it to them and they put them out. And it's, you know, to me, it's always, if you can help somebody by doing this, it's a good thing.
And bring it forward, be an advocate for the hobby. You never know. With stuff like that, Rich, and I know I'm preaching to the choir with you, with stuff like that, you never know, like, the outreach, where that actually goes, you know what I mean? Someone else kind of takes the cue and then does something on their own. It's kind of like what you do helps two people. Those two people, again, do something, and it just kind of, it just, you know, it's like something rolling downhill and just picks up momentum in a positive way. And I'm a big believer in that, and not just cards, but we're talking about cards, but and just in life in general. But, you know, kids, and I know it's important to you, kids in the hobby is a big thing to me. It's why I love, you know, you've got to know from the show, maybe knew him a little bit, you know, Brody the Kid at 13 years old, you know, doing what he's doing. I love seeing that. You know, at 13, I was too shy even to ask my teacher, do you go to the restroom? You know, I'm kidding. But just what he's doing at 13 is just, you know, I couldn't do it at that age. Some people say you're not doing a good job now either, John. But, you know, to do it at 13 is just, to me, all the more impressive. But going back to that, you know, kids in a hobby, they're the future. You know, I hate that, you know, me and I've done a show on card mortality. Then I went on with Dr. Beckett and elaborated some more. You know, unfortunately, we're not going to be here forever. And we need that next group of young people coming up to take that baton and carry this forward. You know, there was people before us in this hobby, and then we came in, and there's going to be people behind us, and we need those folks to keep this hobby strong. We, you know, we could argue that 2020 might be the strongest hobby year ever, and if we want to keep that momentum, we need that, you know, that next group of hobbyist collectors to come behind us or be behind us and push it forward. And if we lose that, or there isn't enough folks behind us, then that's where the hobby could decline or suffer, if you will. And I mean, the hobby's never going to go away. You know, anyone that wants to say that, I mean, we're not, I won't even entertain that. But, you know, if we want it to be strong and thrive, we need that next group of folks to kind of, you know, come behind us like we did prior to folks prior to us. And I think it'll be all right. But, you know, anything we can do now, Rich, you do that. I try to do that. That's just, you know, being an advocate, just being for the hobby. I think it's good. I think it speaks well. If I can pat us both on the back, I think it speaks well of you know, the hobby's bigger than us. And we know that. And, you know, we have to do things to highlight that.
Quick break, but we'll be right back. Pastime Marketplace offers a line of durable graded card cases made for collectors who want high-quality graded card storage that is virtually indestructible. Their cases are waterproof, dustproof, airtight, and designed to protect your valuable collection. Check them all out at www.pastimemarketplace.com. Protect your best with the best. And remember, to save 10% off your total order, use the promo code SCN10. That's capital S, capital C, capital N, 10 for 10% off your total order at pastimemarketplace.com. Sports Card Nation is back.
I always like running my shows as kid friendly shows. I always kept the admission down. You know, when I did the, you know, hopefully we can go back to those days, March or September of next year. The adult shows, you would get for a dollar suggested donation. Yeah. We would let you in for free if you didn't want that. For a dollar suggested donation, I wanted you to get a bag of cards, a pack. It doesn't have to be a good pack, a pack. And the bag of cards has a prize in it. You know, that's a pretty good value for a dollar.
Yeah, yeah.
And we've given away some pretty amazing things over the years. And even when I ran my shows, what I call my profit shows, when I was running them at the hotel where I'm going, same hotel where I'm going for a postcard show this weekend, I was basically, if the kids were around, I let them in for free. I didn't want, you know, and I'm a dollar. And a lot of people, no, it's, keep your dollar, spend it with the dealers. You know, I'll survive either way. You know, a dollar is not going to make a difference. You know, and if I let 15 kids in for free in a show, I was perfectly happy. And half the time, you know, and a lot of times I would do door prizes, and I would give the parents the option. I'm doing a $25 door prize. I will either give you the option, you can let your kids in for free, or I'll give you a door prize ticket, you know, with the dollar for your kid. And if they win it, you get to spend $25 in the room. It was a fair trade-off. It was this way. I'm still protecting the kid if the kid just wants to come in. And a lot of times the kids won the door prizes, so it was really good. And or the parents won them for the kids, and the kids got to spend more money. In fact, there was a couple of times I had, you know, the parents would call me and say, can I do a birthday party? And I said, yeah, my only condition, you know, about letting the kids into, you know, 15, 20 kids into the show, I'll let them in. They'll spend money. I don't care about that. My only condition, I need one or two adults in the room with them. And the reason I needed one or two adults in the room with them is I'm having that many kids. And it's not really a thievery problem. It's the fact that legally, if I'm 16 and I buy from you, and a year and a half later, I decide I don't want the item and I'm not yet 18, you legally have to give me the money back for that item.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I wanted a parent there, especially if it was a big item, to say, okay, I approve of this. It's okay.
Yeah.
I approve of this. You know, there are some kids that are so sharp. With the show I was at this weekend, I was visiting my friend Raymond, who was manning the front table for the weekend. And there was some kid, and he came in and paid his admission. And Raymond was telling me how sharp the kid was, how he was buying from this guy for $200 and selling it to this guy for $500, and was like knowing more than the dealer. It's like, okay, I wouldn't care if I sold to him. Go ahead, make your money. I'm making mine. I'm perfectly happy.
Yeah.
And so I'm okay, you know, with the kids. And some kids are sharper than you and I are, and that's even better.
Oh, yeah, these kids, and I mean, I went to the National in Chicago, and I mean, I talked about this on my show. Some of the money, you know, I did my first show, you might know, I talked about it. At 15, I had a great first show, made $1,500. This is 1987. I don't know what that translates to 2020 money, but at 15, I thought I was on top of the world. That's, I attribute that first show to why I'm still around. And, you know, seeing what some of these kids had at the National, you know, one kid told me, and I'm like, you better be careful. Like, you don't have to worry about me, but it's something else you might have to worry about. Don't advertise that stuff. And it's just crazy where the hobby is, you know, in a short amount of time, you know, a short amount of time. And like you said, these kids are wheeling and dealing. I'm a free enterprise guy, like you just said. If you're good at it and you're doing it legally and everything's above board, you're not robbing or ripping anyone off, then God bless you. You know, there's worse things a kid could be involved in. If it keeps him off, you know, off the streets and out of trouble, and he learns the value of a dollar that way, then it's still economics. It's just a different form of economics, you know. And maybe maybe as he grows up, maybe he'll be an accountant or a stockbroker. Who knows, you know, where it leads. And, you know, his background in the cards and the economics of that, there's similarities to some of that stuff, especially nowadays. And so, you know, good for these young men. I mean, like I said, as long as they're doing it the right way and not shady and all that stuff, then good. So I want to speak of the show. You recently did the show, you know, during the pandemic. We're obviously still in the pandemic. Certain states are in better shape than others. Some have taken sort of a regression. Kind of speak, Rich, to how the show was, you know, during the pandemic, you know, differences, observations. You know, you've done a lot of shows. You know, what did you see? Like, what would you...
Well, the biggest difference, obviously, is wearing a mask.
Yeah.
Kyle's now done three shows. The first one in June was masks were heavily recommended but not mandatory. And, of course, since they were not mandatory, a lot of people did not wear them.
Yeah.
And it was a little scary. Fortunately, the room he used for that show, the door was open. The loading door was open on Friday and Sunday. And on Saturday, actually... And I went to both June and August as an attendee. And there weren't as many people in June. So actually, both Dr. Beckett and I were hitting the same dealer's table.
Yeah.
He did football. I did baseball. We both went through the discount boxes. In August, the mask quote, it had gone from heavily recommended to mandatory. Same location. I felt a lot more comfortable. I bought a lot of really nice, cheap vintage at that show. I was very happy with that. And I didn't buy as much new stuff, and that was okay. And then this I set up at, And again, and there were only a couple people who weren't wearing properly their masks when they came, or weren't wearing them at all when they came to my table. And I asked them, and they both were, and both of those gentlemen were very courteous and immediately took, you know, put them on properly, and we had no issues.
Yeah.
So it's a show I now carry. They were handing out, the lady from this hotel was handing out hand sanitizer, you know, little packets of hand sanitizer. I actually carry now my own hand sanitizer with me. I carry extra masks with me. There was a gentleman at the show who's, you know, dealer I know. I had done his show. He had done about six shows before he stopped doing it a few years ago. And his mask broke because, you know, he was using one of the, you know, one of these type of masks. I know, I don't know if our audience can see it.
And it broke. In a typical cert, like the doctor, the blue thin with the white straps for those.
Right. Who, yeah. And I mean, they're available right now at Sam's at reasonable prices. My friend Bruce was next to me. He had me next to me so he could have somebody extra watch his table if he wanted to walk around.
Yeah.
And both of us had extra masks. And we said, and he was all concerned. I said, do you want a mask? Do you want two masks? And so we each gave him a mask. So this guy, Roger, was very happy with, you know, he didn't have to worry. But, you know, so the masks, and I will tell you, it's a little more difficult to really look through cards if you're standing with a mask on.
Yeah,
that is
no,
a little bit more. That's a little bit more difficult.
Yeah.
Sitting is really not such a bad issue. Other than that, people were buying and selling cards. I mean, it was totally normal. But it was a lot like, and I think you and I talked about this on the pre-show. It was a lot like Hobby Hotline or, you know, About the Cards or whatever the top, you know, whatever show we want to refer to come to life.
Yeah,
it was a lot of the modern unopened stuff, you know, that they may have bought at the retail. You know, a lot of the cards were pulled. These cards I don't know enough about, so if even if there was a great deal at somebody's table, I wouldn't know what to buy and what not to buy, so I don't buy it.
Yeah.
So
what about attendance? How much do you think attendance is down on the customer side, and how about dealer wise? Yeah, are you having dealers that say, listen, I'm going to wait till this thing is in the rearview mirror before I set up shop again. How much, is there any of that at all?
There's a little of that. There are some collectors I know who have not gone to a show since then. You know, but, you know, especially now that life, I don't want to say is back to normal, but is in Texas is closer to what it was. I mean, my wife's teaching. She goes to a school every day. I mean, I'm concerned, but I mean, if she's willing to teach, then I certainly can go to a card show.
Yeah.
And there's I'd say maybe 25% of your attendees aren't coming. Most dealers are dealing. And like, you know, I know several of them I spoke to, I said, hey, you know, when we do our show, masks are required. You know, this is not an optional mask. But obviously, if you eat something, you can take it off to eat. And like, if you're loading in, I'm not going to absolutely make you wear it loading in and loading out because it's, I loaded in and loaded out on Saturday and Sunday with a mask on. Let me tell you, and I walk in the mall every day with a mask, or every day is an exaggeration, but I'm making that. I walk 3 miles in the mall with a mask on almost every day. You know, yeah. Let me tell you, it's not super easy with a mask on doing a brisk 3 miles every day.
Yeah. No, those things, I wear one at my job. Those things can, you know, it keeps some of that hot air in. It gets a little hot. I know when I go out of my classroom, I'm in the hallway by myself. I'll pull that down and get some fresh air, no doubt. And, you know, I just think, you know, unfortunately, it may be, you know, sort of a, I think some people are just going to wear masks for a long time just because of the fear factor of, you know, coming down with whether it's COVID-19 or even just, you know, we're in flu season now. And so people are worried. Now, you know, if we weren't worried about just COVID-19, here comes regular flu season.
Attendance was a little bit down compared to Kyle's show and Alan, which happens to be, by a miraculous thing, across the – basically, I can walk to his show from my ComC office.
Yeah.
My ComC office is within walk – literally, I mean, I crossed the street to go to it. And – but, you know, it – but he put together a nice show with 3 weeks' notice. It's really not that bad. And I sent out an email to my mailing list. Hey, you know, you haven't seen me for 9 months behind the table. Come see me at Kyle's show. And I know some people showed up. And so it was kind of cool to see. And I mean, it really was a normal show other than, you know, wearing a mask. And it was a little harder to talk with it on. But I, you know, one of the things in my office right now, I'm in the office by myself.
Yeah.
Trust me, I wear the mask if I'm in the common areas like you're supposed to in Regis. But the minute I'm in my office, guess what comes off the second I'm in my office?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, thank you, it's off.
Yeah.
But I'm all in favor of where I want everyone to wear it in the common areas.
Yeah.
But if you're in your office and you're by yourself, you don't want to have it on, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, when it's the same thing where I work, Rich, you know, when Mike, you know, I talk about my classroom, when we're done with class for the day and the students go back to the hotel where they stay, that mask is actually, I just pull it down and it's literally on my chin and on my beard. And if someone comes in, like my room, like a coworker, I'll flip it back up. But, you know, we're all, you know, as far as we know, negative. But you never know. And out of respect. And, you know, I agree with you. I think, you know, I'm glad we're getting back to some sort of normalcy with events and sports. If we have to wear a mask to do it, if we have to wear a mask so we can have a card show, then there's worse things in life. Wear the mask. You don't want to go, you don't have to wear the mask. I hope you go and you wear the mask. But, you know, we were quarantined for months, you know, which seemed like years to a lot of people. And, you know, we kind of just shut down everything to a grinding halt. That, you can't do that and sustain an economy. And we need to get, I'm not saying put people's health at risk, but we need to get back to doing things. If that has to happen with a mask on, then let's wear a mask and get back and do some recreational stuff and enjoy life. You know, life goes quick, and I don't want to lose a whole year of not being able to do anything, or longer potentially, if you hear somebody's, you know, doctors and talk about how long this may go on. Wear your mask. You don't want to wear your mask, stay in the house. I know some people will, you know, there's that whole debate, do the mask really help? You know, there's people who think COVID-19 is not even real. I'm not going.
We're not going there. But I will tell you, I researched quite a bit about the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic.
Yeah.
This anti-mask thing, San Francisco literally almost, you know, they had to turn over government almost because there was a big anti-mask thing, especially in San Francisco and in California. So this is nothing new. So there is truly is nothing new under the sun. But, you know, if that's the biggest thing, as you said, just wear your mask at the show, respect everybody else, and then, but the rest of it is cool. And hey, we want you to wear your mask. And if that's the biggest thing we ask you to attend my show,
yeah,
that's fine.
Yeah.
That's not a big deal.
But, and like you, know, you said,
show, you know, it, and especially the Brotherhood tends to skew older, so I really do have to look out for them.
And here's the thing. Whether you think the masks are doing you any good or not, do it like you just said. You said it perfectly. Do it out of respect to your fellow man that does believe in that and agrees with scientists or medical professionals that say that. And what's the harm? You wear a mask, you know, you get in the hallway where there's no one out there, like I said I do, and pull it down, get some fresh air. You know, no harm, no fouls. It's worse things in life that you're going to have to unfortunately go through than wearing a mask. If you want to go out and attend these things and enjoy yourself and whatever it is, then do it. You know, I know, you know, even concerts right now are, you know, basically in home studios via this method, you know, Zooms and like that. But eventually I'd like to see shows get back. If everyone in the crowd has to wear a mask to do it, then so be it. You don't want to go to the show, stay home, don't wear your mask, right? I mean,
and I will tell you that in Kyle's August show, approximately 1,500 people, let's say 90% of them were wearing masks, came through Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. That is not bad.
Yeah. No,
I think that's enough on masks for now.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. If we wear them and we follow the proper procedures, we can get back to having shows.
We can yeah, and other it. Things. I mean, that's a hobby show, obviously. We're both in the hobby, so that's where our
But that's where we want to focus on. Yeah. But we can do other things, too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you want to go shopping, you got to wear your mask. You know, that's you do it. I mean, you just do it. It sounds like a Nike commercial right there. But
again, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back with more Rich Klein. Let me tell you about Iron Sports Cards and Collectibles. They're your number one source for all your PSA and now SGC submissions. They offer various service levels at the lowest prices around. They even provide the card savers your cards need to be submitted at no extra charge. Their elite status helps improve turnaround times, and their chat rooms keep you abreast of your subs and the status of your cards. What are you waiting for? Contact Rob on Facebook on Iron Sports Card Group. That's Iron Sports Card Group on Facebook. Or get a hold of Rob on Twitter at Iron Sports Cards. All one word, at Iron Sports Cards. They'll take care of you. Card Nation is back.
I want to get into another subject a few months back, maybe even a little bit longer than that. You know, I kept hearing the term, and it wasn't just one person necessarily that was saying it, but, the new money term, which I really take sort of whether someone means it in that fashion, I take it as derogatory, with a lot of the new people coming in and we're labeling them. I'm a guy that welcomes everyone again, my cliche line, long as you're doing it above board and legal, enjoy the hobby any way you so choose. I want these new folks coming in. We want the hobby to grow. And when you label someone new money, it's got a poker slang to it. It's sort of derogatory. It's got a I was here first kind of connotation to it. You're new. You're the new kid on the block. I don't like it. And so I went off on a rant on actually this show, and then I posted something as well. And you wrote a very good piece, which obviously I read as I read most of your stuff. That kind of touched on that, and I believe we were waving the same pennant, and we're rooting for the same team here, that we want everyone to enjoy the hobby, that we shouldn't be very unwelcome to people. I'm going to be honest with you, and I want to get your two cents, Rich. I think it's gotten even worse since that day, rather than better. I think there's more of a, coin people, flippers, investors, new money, sneakerheads. I mean, name a label, it's probably been used. And I like to see us be better than that. I think we're seeing a little bit too much of that in society. That's where we're having some of those problems in the real world. Not that the hobby's not the real world, but on a grander scale, let's just say.
Well, 1981, 1982, we called those people coin dealers.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I remember.
I mean, we really did, because a lot of coin dealers had made huge money, 79, 80, when the gold and silver, when silver was $50 an ounce.
Yeah.
You know, another thing that helped, that I would go with my father, there were people who were buying silver, and my dad had been, and this is part of where I got the collector gene from, my dad had been a best pocket stamp and coin dealer in the 40s and 50s before he got married. Well, he still had a lot of silver dollars. He still had a lot of stuff. He's not stupid. These prices are insane. Yeah. He'd go, I'd go. Since I was over 18, we keep the amount coming in under $600, so it wouldn't get reported. I mean, we'd actually measure it out. And I would go home, and every week, he'd hand me money. He'd hand me a commission of 10% for going and doing it. You know, yeah. On my share. His share he got to keep. My share I got to keep 10%, which was fine. Free money for going home, I'll take that any day of the week.
Yeah.
You know, struggling college students, even if you're paying for baseball cards, you still want beer money.
Yeah, yeah.
So you go and you, and by the way, in those days it was very funny. I went to a school in New York. New York had switched the drinking age while I was in college from 18 to 21, but because I was 18 before they switched the drinking age, they grounded all of us in, so I could legally drink a beer even though I wasn't 21 in those days.
Yeah.
But, you know, now it's back to 21, but that's a different story for a different day. But you know, all of a sudden, silver went back to where it should be, $8, $10 an ounce. These coin dealers aren't making their money. They hear the baseball card market's exploding. Let's go into that. You know, this is, of course, during the recession, so we have a lot of new money. We called new money in 81, 82 coin dealers. So, it, you know, it's the same thing. I don't have, in those days, I had a similar problem. They're not really hobbyists. Well, guess what? They're perfectly fine. If I knew then what I knew now, hey, welcome, come join. Some will stay. If 10, 15% stay, that's perfectly fine. If the rest go away when they find something else, that's fine too. I'm okay with that, but it brings an energy to this business. You know, I'm going to use, and it's a parallel, but not an exact image. I'm going to use a parallel to, like, one of the questions I asked Dr. Jim when I first went to Beckett. I love the old cards, but let's say 48 to 79 was taking as many pages in Beckett Price Guide as 1990.
Yeah.
You know, and who cares if Sam Horn Rookie, well, I say that's an 88 card, but who cares if Sam Horn Rookie goes from 25 cents to 20 cents? At this point, he's 27 years old. It's irrelevant. He's not going to make it. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
We could eliminate him from the price guide. It would be just as simple, even though that's where the activity is. And Jim's answer is that is where the activity is. If the sneakerheads, the new money, the people who were getting extra money from unemployment because they were getting $600 a week extra and actually making more money than they were if they were working. And, of course, now in some states they're finding out they're having to return some of this unemployment money because things were misadjusted. That's kind of wrong, too. Hey, if they did the numbering wrong and you got money, you shouldn't have to pay it back.
Yeah.
You know, that's not on them. That's really not on them. That's on the government or the state for screwing that.
Yeah.
Not on them. But hey, money's coming in. If money's coming in, and as you said, they do it right, or that woman who took all those prison boxes or whatever the basketball was in
front of them. Optic, yep.
Same Optic, thing. Fine, whatever. It's whatever box.
Was.
You know what? If she can make money on it, God bless her.
Yeah.
Because she got there. You know, me, I'll, you know, since I had a good enough show, I'll probably stop by Walmart this weekend. I'll see if there's, and you know what, if the only thing there is a Heritage closeout box or two from last year, thank you. I'll be very happy to pay less. It's not anything anybody would chase other than me, and I'll be very happy.
And, you know, that's the thing I try to point out on the show, Rich, is the folks that are in the hobby and then these new people coming in, and they're looking at these new people as adversaries. If you like your card values to be where they're at, you can thank some of these folks that are coming in and transacting in the hobby and keeping these you know, the economy of the hobby going. If everyone that you don't, you know, all these new people are coming in, you want them to leave and get lost. I'm not speaking for myself. I'm just making a statement. Those values are going to go get lost as well with some, not across the board. I mean, cards aren't going to zero out, but, you know, sales are going to go down. There's less people buying stuff. There's less customers. There's going to be less transaction, less competition in auctions to drive a final bid price up. And so, you know, I always use this line, you know, be careful what you wish for because you might get it and then you might not like, yeah, that person, those folks are gone. You got your wish there, but so are your high prices if you're trying to sell stuff or transact stuff. So, you know, it's the old, you can't have your cake and eat it too. So, you know, if you're fine with, you know, prices coming down, and some people probably would sign up for that and say, yeah, I'm good with that. I don't sell, you know, I'm not a seller. So I don't want these people here. And I think that's where sort of the place is kind of coming from, is the non-store owner, the non-auction person, platform, you know, people who don't, if you want to call it the true, you know, air quotes, true collector, I just buy, I don't resell anything. Those, you know, those people would probably benefit the most from somebody, you know, that faction, let's say, leaving or not being involved in the hobby. But even that genre of folks, like, you know, if you're a collector of a player, of a team, don't you? Even those folks will admit, like, I want my cards to be the highest value after I get them. You know, once I have them, I don't want to pay top dollar, but I want them to be, if I ever was to think about moving them or selling them, I want them to be top dollar. So I think we're quick as hobbyists to, like, get lost. I was here first. We don't need you. without thinking about sort of the ramifications of those thoughts and ideas. And you know, I'm like you. I think we're similar, and it's free enterprise. You know, we mentioned, like you mentioned, the woman I talked about the store with the whole display rack of optics. She got there before me. She offered me a couple of boxes, and full disclosure, I said, no, that's okay. You got them. You know, enjoy. And she didn't know who Zion Williamson was if he was standing next to her. But, you know, she just knew these boxes were going to sell for more than she was going to buy them for, and she's going to make money. And what's wrong with that? Like, if, you know, are you going to walk past the $20 bill that's blowing on the ground and leave it there? Like, who's going to do that? Like, you know, I understand we all have that insatiable appetite to get product. I want to open some. I don't open nearly as much as I used to anyway, but, I mean, we all want to open some stuff sometimes. You know, it's been a bad year for me in that category as far as the Walmart and Target runs, but it is what it is. You know, you can. There's other options. You can pre-order product from some of the online wax wholesalers, if you will, or retailers. You know, there's ways to get stuff. I mean, we can do a whole show on all that stuff. But, you know,
I didn't buy very much this weekend. One of the few things I bought, I was, you know, I always want to buy something when I go to a card show. You don't want to not buy anything.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I'm walking around on Sunday. I'd had another good day on Sunday, not as good as Saturday, but that was to be expected with the Cowboys game at noon, which basically, you know, left 2 hours for the show, you know, 10 to 12.
Yeah.
But I had a decent enough day. And I also socked away money from the day before. So then I'm at this table, and there's a gallery blaster box from 2019 for $20 on this guy's table. That's what it would have cost at Walmart. Okay, thank goodness I can buy something.
Yeah.
And I bought a gallery blaster box just to buy something. They also had a big league box for $30, which I probably should have bought too just to open it. But I was like, no, it's one box is sufficient. Gallery, you can sometimes get good things. And I didn't get anything great, but I did get a Gallery Heritage Acuna card, and I got a dual card of Aaron Judge and Mickey Mantle, one of those dual cards from the deck. So that's not really bad. You know, there were a couple.
And you got to open something and enjoy the process of opening.
And I got to open something. I got to enjoy the process, and it was $20, which is for blaster, what you should be. Yeah. You know, I wrote about this that on National Baseball Card Day. I wandered into Walmart because I had to buy some things, and they have four blaster boxes of any sort left: two 2020 football of some sort, a 2019 Diamond King, a 2020 Diamond King's blaster, and a 2019 Heritage blaster. And the Heritage blaster was $10. Those were the two baseball boxes were an easy decision. Thank you. And I did well out of the Diamond King box. And at $10 for Heritage, you're going to get two short prints usually. So anything else becomes a bonus. So those are gimmies. And I'll probably wander to Walmart this weekend. And, you know, one thing, I'm very lucky. I have several decent LCSs near me. And, you know, when I buy the boxes, I move the cards so I make sure I don't conflate anything for the synagogue goes into a 3,200-count box. So I buy 3,200-count boxes there. I buy other hobby supplies there. And I always make sure I buy some packs while I'm there. I buy Heritage packs. And whatever I spend, wonderful. And I go and I say, but I make sure to spend, and somebody says, you can buy these supplies cheaper. No, I want to support my LCS. As a matter of fact, the guy that owns that LCS is going to, you know, he's going to open more LCS. He's going to open a couple more when the time comes.
Yeah.
So he's doing really well, and he's very business savvy. And one of the other LCS a couple years ago moved from a smaller location to a location with a back room. And has done much better with, you know, more space to sell stuff. So, you know, this hobby was growing even before the explosion of 2020. But 2020 has been such a goofy year in that this is an explosion no one could have planned for. You know.
I went back and listened to my show in March when the pandemic really first kind of was breaking, and I remember saying on my show, I was wrong. I'm glad I'm wrong, but I'm like, brace yourself. I think the hobby is going to, you know, not crash, but we're going to kind of go sort of in a holding pattern. You know, it's not going to be food on the table and necessity things. And so we're going to see some prices kind of stabilize and come down. And as you know, I'm talking to someone who knows just as well as I do. I was wrong. Yeah, this year, and listen, we both have a lot of experience in the hobby. We both expected something and got another. And that tells you where the hobby is. You can have all this wealth of knowledge, experience, and, you know, here we are in March not predicting what we have here in October. And I think that's the beauty of the hobby. Just never know what can happen next. Keeps us on our toes and, you know, our head on a swivel. And it's fun. Again, when we talk about the pandemic, I hope we're on the backside of that and gets back to some sort of normalcy. I think we're going to have a new sense of normalcy. But at least, you know, like we talked about, wear a mask. But let's go out and do some extracurricular activities. If we have to wear a mask to get it done, then let's just do it. Suck it up for a couple hours, like you said, and let's get out there and enjoy whatever it is in life we do, whether it be for us a card show, for someone else a rock show, or whatever. You know, we got to keep the economy going. We got to have some, you know, we got to have some sense of enjoyment, some sort of outlet with what's going on. You know, it's already sort of depressing on the surface. Let's try to make the best of it. And I'm glad you got the shows going on in Texas.
Quick break, and we'll be back with more Ridge Climb. One of One Card Shop offers a tremendous breaking experience, great customer service, and they're constantly pulling fire. Steve and his family take care of you like one of their own and treat you right. Anyone can break, but no one treats you like One of One. Come check them out on Instagram at @one_of_one_card_shop. For all the hot breaks, get a gold mailer headed your way. Sports Card Nation is back with Rich Klein.
Here in New York, we're not, even though we're actually doing well, we don't have any shows scheduled, at least here in central New York, where I am. I'm not sure. I'm thinking New York City's probably not right, not yet. And so, you know.
And the White Plains Convention Center is a backup hospital until at least the end of the year, so there's no shows there.
Yep.
And I know my friend Gary Sipos in New Jersey at Garfield Boys and Girls Club. It's a while before he can run his shows. You know, we have places we can run shows. I have chosen basically not to do my hotel show. I'm sure in today's world I could sell a lot of tables. I personally don't want to run it, but I'm okay attending.
Yeah.
Because I would have trouble sleeping, but that's me.
Yeah.
But, you know, on happier thoughts, we have a wonderful hobby.
Yeah,
we have a wonderful time.
Well, that's how strong the hobby is. Rich is they not only did it get through the pandemic, like me and you were worried what would really happen. It was arguably the best hobby year in the history of the whole hobby, and that's saying something. Where other industries would trade places in a heartbeat with the card industry right now.
Well, look at it this way. I work in the card industry.
Yep.
And ComC during the calendar year 2020 will hire more people than, and I'm going to put this in a bit of air quotes, than when I went out for my air quote interview in 2014.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to, that we're working on the staff in the one building in Redmond, Washington in 2014. ComC now is hiring more people this year just to help us catch up with everything that's going on. We actually caught up 20% of our backlog last week.
Yeah.
It's still behind more than we want to be, but, you know, that's a heck of a good week. If you can catch up 20% every week, you'll be fairly close to normal fairly soon.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned being behind. We got to kind of coming down the home stretch here. But also, you know, grading companies are behind. They're behind because of the strength of the hobby. People are submitting cards, obviously, to ComC, to grading card companies. There's no slowdown. Matter of fact, it's been an uptick. If to be 100%. That's a good thing. Whether that's because we have a new influx of new people, then I'm all, welcome. I'm like you. Welcome to the hobby. My name's John Newman. This is Rich Klein. If you have any
questions, hi, welcome.
Yeah, we're here to help you. And I think I wish more people were like that. Not to always say like, hey, be more like me. I'm not that egotistical, but more welcoming. When I came in, I'm sure when you came in, I didn't feel any animosity as a 7-year-old kid. When I set up for my first show at 15 years old with men in the room that were dealers too, I probably got a few funny looks, but everyone was very nice. I was sort of like the Doogie Howser of car dealers. I think I got double takes because I told this story on the show. I remember being behind my table and the guy was kind of looking at my showcases for a while and I was kind of shy, believe it or not. But finally I'm like, can I help you? And he said, I remember this like yesterday, even though it was 32 years ago. He's like, I want to know if, you could do a little better. I'll wait till your dad comes back.
Well,
this is my stuff. And he was like short of shocked. And so, there's funny moments, but everyone was very nice. I never felt any sort of animosity. And I don't think we're there anymore. And that makes me sad. As great as the hobby's doing here in 2020, Rich, the fact that if I was coming into the hobby today rather than in 1979, I'd catch a different vibe from folks. And I feel bad that that's the case,
This is kind of sort of related. I think I wrote the story when I was doing Rich's Ramblings for Sports Collectors Daily. I now write Klein's Corner for GTS.
Yeah.
And I did a show April of 1982. I hadn't done a show for months at that point. There was really nothing I liked to do. I think there weren't a lot, but I hadn't done a show for months. And so so I hadn't been on the circuit. And if you remember early 1982, the big thing, and you're like 10 years old, was the George Foster era with and without signature. That was the hot card. Yeah. $3-4. And I swear I'm setting up. And these dealers, like a couple of dealers, like it's like piranhas. Do you have? Yeah, they're $3 each. They're not commons. I do read the hobby publications. And that's how you had to find out those days. No, I read the hobby publications, the $3 card. You want to pay me $3, you're welcome to it. If I have 10. If you want to pay me 25 for the 10, I'm fine with that. And the look was like I think they were expecting to get it because they hadn't seen me for a dime or a quarter because they were figuring, oh, he doesn't know what's going on. Sorry. Of course, from that point on, I realized that wasn't going to be my best show either because it's like, oh, he actually knows what's going on. Oops.
Yeah, well, you know it's tough. Well, Rich, I thank you for giving us some time, man. I'm glad we got to talk this time a little bit more about you rather than the history of the hobby, which, don't get me wrong, I enjoy that, and I enjoy your encyclopedia and knowledge, which I think is brilliant. But I listened to that first episode, like I said, when we first started talking on this episode, and I felt bad. I'm like, we didn't even talk about Rich's, how he got into cards, what he collected, what he liked, and we just talked about everything but. And so I'm glad we got to get a mulligan and cover that today. And I think we have similar views on many things, and maybe that's because we've just been in this hobby so long. We kind of grew up together, so to speak, with the hobby. And hopefully, even with all some of the negative things we talked about, at the end of the day, the hobby's thriving. Let's hope it continues to move along that track. And even as the pandemic hopefully slowly winds down and ends in the rearview mirror.
Well, I hope I'm half as good as your guest for episode 100.
Yeah. No, you're
one of my mentors in life. Yes, I think he's a very good choice for episode 100.
Yeah, and not the shameless plug. Even with that, I wanted to get with the three people: Dr. Beckett, Brody the Kid, and Drew. And the rationale, to be honest with you, and I'll say it during that show, for me, growing up in the hobby as a young kid, and then a show dealer at 15. you know, Beckett Publications was the Bible, and very to think I would know, you know, Dr. Jim on the level I do now. Then I would have thought you were nuts.
You might have actually seen him, because Jim used to go up to New York because he was doing a book called House of Collectibles.
Yeah,
which was a little, and Jim would go up to New York about once a month to talk to Random House, and he always scheduled those trips usually for a Gloria Rothstein show. But he did some other stuff too. So, I mean, if you were ever at a show that he attended, you might have seen him without even knowing it.
Yeah, it could be. You could be in New York. Everyone kind of just a melting pot. And so for me, he's you know, on that Mount Rushmore. And then Brody, as I said, I don't want to make this, you know, the Brody the Kid roast. But, you know, at 13, you know, I got my start as a young kid. When I see a young kid doing the things he did, that's inspirational to me. He inspires me. And then Drew, when I got into the podcasting realm, as far as the hobby, he was very helpful and kind of gave me a lot of pointers and info that I needed to.
And I think you're great. And I'm going to phrase it this way. This is like an old radio station, since we talk about music. And I've never talked about a lot about music, but I actually listen to music all day in the office. I really don't listen a lot of times to sports. I'll listen to old radio. You know, there are some countdowns. Somebody just posted some old radio air checks. He's just created a channel. I listen to some internet shows. There's Laughos with Sammy out of a college in upstate New York. There's Rich Appel's that thing with Rich Appel. There's Don Tandler, the record handler, who does a countdown each week of some old WABC, WLS, Cashbox, some countdown each week that I found a link that has all the old shows. I listen to a few other things, but I swear probably about 80% of the time I listen to something like that. Yeah. I go back to my youth, but it also gets my mind, you know, there's not sports on during the day and I don't always want to listen to sports. So I listen to that. I mean, I'm immersed enough in sports doing my Tom C work. That, you know, I pay a lot of attention that way. I see this. It's like opening packs and seeing the best cards and not having to spend a dime. It's a wonderful world.
Yeah,
I get paid to look at what other people pull. Hey, I'll do that any day of the week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Save a little money in the process, too.
And, yeah, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's kind of, you know, but as I said, what you've got with those three is yesterday, today, and tomorrow.
Yeah, and that's, you know,
Jim is proactive, but Jim is yesterday. Jim's stuff is the 80s, the 90s, stuff that we built this foundation on.
Yeah.
Drew is today. He's a perfect example of today.
Yeah.
And Brody is tomorrow. It's a perfect, it's actually a really good mix.
And that, I'm glad you see it that way, because that's sort of where I was going. I would love to listen, and I'm not just saying this. I would love to have every guest I've had on. You know, we got to 100 episodes because of every guest we've had on the show. Everyone has been, you know, donating of their time. No one gets paid to appear on the show. And, you know, I appreciate everyone, yourself included now twice, that comes on. And so I'd love to have 70. I think we've had 70 different interviews. I'd love to have a show with 70 people on it to celebrate 100. And I'll say it during episode 100. I'm going to thank all the, you know, sponsors, guests, listeners. Obviously, you don't get to episode 100 without all those elements. And so, you know, I'm glad you mentioned with the three. That's kind of where I was going. Someone I looked up to as a younger person in the hobby, still look up to, still active, like
so
yourself.
Do I, by the way.
Huh?
So do I, by the way.
Yeah. And Drew just being sort of on, you know, he did it before me and then helped me, but on that level. And then, like you said, Brody is, you know, we talked about that next group that's going to have to pick up the baton and run with it. And that's his group. And if he's kind of the face of that group, which I'll put him as that. That group's going to be in good shape because he's passionate, he's enthusiastic, he's knowledgeable, he's putting in the work,
and
doing stuff. Like I said, at 13, I wouldn't even know where to start. And so, good for him. And you know, it's going to be fun to do. But again, that show is going to be a celebration, not just of those three individuals, but of everyone that's got, you know, you don't get to that point without everybody being an integral part of it. So, and yourself.
Thanks for having me, John.
Thank you.
You didn't keep me up for 2 hours like some people I know, so I appreciate you.
All right, stay safe, be well. I'll talk to you.
Okay, bye-bye.
So to find folks at 101 Card Shop was allowing us to give away a $25 break credit each week, but then I thought about it, and I approached them about, can we do, instead of 25 a week, it's a lot of work for you, it's a lot of work for me getting everyone lined up with their emails and their accounts. I'm like, you know, Steve, why don't we do $50 every other week, twice a month? And so that's what we're going to do. It started this week. We picked the winner via retweet draw, a app I have that I paid a lifetime fee to use, but wasn't very expensive. And, we took all the retweets, and that app just randomly picks a winner. And the first winner of the every other week $50 break credit to 101 Card Shop, thank you to them, is actually someone I know pretty well, big fan of the show, Ben Fuqua. He's on Twitter, at Ben Fuqua. Ben, if you're listening to the show, reach out to me and we'll get you all set up. Congratulations to you. Well, that's a wrap for episode 97 of the Sports Card Nation podcast. Want to thank my guest, Rich Klein, for bringing that knowledge, that encyclopedia of knowledge to the show. I hope you took something away from that. Rich enjoys the hobby, a great ambassador of the hobby, a legend, not in his own mind, but he definitely is a legend in the hobby. And glad to call him a friend and a co-worker in a sense with what we do, you know, on the shows and Hobby Hotline, and really appreciate him coming on. Got to learn a little bit more about him personally, something I kind of missed the first time he appeared on Sports Card Nation. So glad to have him back. Hope you enjoyed his appearance. I want to thank you. Can't do this without you. If we don't have you guys out there donating your time wherever it may be, whether it's in a car, at work, at home, in the office, in the den, I appreciate it, and I mean that sincerely. And I'll try to keep this closing short and brief. I know we went long with the interview, but it was well worth it. Be good to each other. You know, there's plenty of shows, whatever ones you like. I listen to other shows. Very few people listen to one show. Enjoy the hobby. Enjoy the content in whatever form and fashion. Doesn't have to be ugly and nasty. There's plenty of that going on in society there and now, you know, in the hobby. I'm going to try not to partake in that foolishness. And that's really what it is. And so with that being said, I wish everyone well. Have a safe, be safe, and stay healthy. And we'll see you next week on Sports Card Nation.